Star Wars collectors love to be together. We often travel far distances across states and across large bodies of water to destinations at which our fellow collectors gather. We long to be with those who appreciate Star Wars and collecting like we do. We yearn for those Star Wars-themed moments, the finds, the friends, and the fun that await us at a convention, at a meetup, or at an event. We live for those memorable trips. They're the ones that offer the chance to do things we've never done before, to see collectibles we've never seen previously, and to experience Star Wars in a way that is as momentous and as exciting as the films themselves. We look to laugh together, to bond, and to build friendships. We seek these moments and we realize how special each one is, and how fortunate we are to have large circles of collectors that look to be together as many times as possible each year. But in a year without a premier Star Wars event, what do collectors do? What happens when there's no Star Wars Celebration convention, which is often a planet-sized gathering whose gravitational pull draws collectors from around the world? What happens when there's no international collectors event, where collectors spend a long weekend in one region of the country touring their peers' collections and seeing the sights unique to that area? What happens when there's nothing like that on the calendar for an entire year? If you're the Georgia Alliance of Star Wars Collectors, you make your own event. You model it after previous meetups, using what worked and adding new and creative elements. You pull the essence of celebration, but you leave behind the corporate blaring, the endless lines, and the chaos. You set up a home base, a host hotel, and build a world of activities around it and inside of it. You contact members from your club and ask if they'll host collector panels. You contact former employees from Kenner and from Nelvana Animation, those who had a hand in making Star Wars and the memorabilia something special, and you ask them to share their incredible stories. You set up local trips to collectors' homes, excursions to hike together and to hang out together. You set up the possibility for an unforgettable room sales with some of the top vintage and modern Star Wars collectors in the hobby. And you add personal and fresh touches to the standards collectors love. And most importantly, you give everyone a reason to come together for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Georgia. This is part one of a two-part series that takes you behind the scenes for the making of the Rogue Fun Weekend event in May. This is a conversation with the three Georgia Club members bold enough to plan an epic meetup for more than 135 of the most passionate and knowledgeable Star Wars collectors. This is what makes being a Star Wars collector truly worthwhile. This is Glenn Williams, Jason Wilsuko, and Narayan Naik, ready to talk Rogue Fun. Take it away, guys.
And this is Star Wars Prototypes and Production.
Coruscant to Tatooine, and every planet in between, Star Wars, Prototypes and Production, with your host, David Quinn.
Lord Vader, it's a trap!
Yes, Master.
Well, we're gonna have company!
Have to stand and fight.
The more you tighten your grip, darling, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
I want to learn the ways of the Force and become a Jedi like my father.
The Force will be with you, always.
How did Rogue Fun grow from a kernel of an idea into the biggest Star Wars collectors gathering of the year? That was the question I wanted to explore. I wanted to learn more about this weekend event occurring in May, and I wanted to hear directly from the team planning it. So I contacted my friends, Georgia Alliance members Narayan Naik, Glenn Williams, and Jason Wilsuko, and asked them to give us an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at how and why Rogue Fun came together. If you've ever attended a convention or a collector's meetup, there are times in which a particular feeling forms along the way, in the days or weeks leading up to the event. It's woven into the normal anticipation for the trip's arrival, but at the same time, it's a different color thread. You can't quite explain the feeling, but you feel it. It pulses within you. It's like a flashing sign that repeats the same phrase over and over again. Get ready, because this one is going to be special. You don't know how you know this. You can't explain it, but you know. And for a while, I and many others have felt that way about Rogue Fun. Maybe that's due to the care and creativity that went into planning it. Or maybe it's because many of us will be in the same room together, either for the first time in a while, or simply for the very first time. And most likely, it's because all of the connective elements that make a collector's trip special are waiting for us in Georgia. And as I said, I have that feeling that this is going to be one of those unforgettable trips. And I want you to be a part of it. And whether you're planning on attending, or you're hearing about it for the first time today, I wanted to share the story of Rogue Fun with you. So Jason, Glenn, and Orion have agreed to take us through the event, to tell us about the planning for it, and how the response to their idea completely surprised them. And in this series, they'll also share the trip's itinerary, and what travelers to the Kennesaw region can expect during the May 4th weekend. So let's join the Georgia crew for a very special look at the magic and the making of Rogue Fun. So Glenn, I'm really excited to hear all about Rogue Fun, and I wanted to ask you first to start out, what is the Georgia Alliance of Star Wars Collectors?
Well, it is a club that I started with a couple of other guys, Justin Haney and Shane Patrick, about 7 years ago, and I can go into like very insane detail, but basically we coming back from Celebration, actually it's this weekend, was Celebration in Orlando. And we had been talking to each other for a few months before that. And it was just, we, on the way back from Celebration, we were like, man, it's time. We've got to bring what Celebration and the joy we had at Celebration into Atlanta, because there was no real clubs, or, you know, there was nothing like that here. And it just blossomed into what we have today. 7 years later, we've got Jason and Orion that have been, you know, a great asset to the club and helping running it and just doing an amazing job. And we just keep growing. And now we're doing this, Rogue Fun.
And Rogue Fun sounds like an amazing event. I know that the club has been around for a while, and I've met each of you through the club, and the club has really grown over the years. Narayan, just in a few sentences, what is Rogue Fun?
Rogue Fun, I think at its core, is a collector's social event. It's trying to take some of those best aspects of Celebration that, you know, where we're, this club was initially inspired, and, you know, bring it to a more intimate setting, and, you know, without all the difficulties of going to Celebration, you know, the lines, the crowds, and just to have it in a more intimate setting where you can talk with your friends and fellow collectors, you know, in a more relaxed setting. So we, you know, are bringing things like collector panels, things like from the collecting track, just hanging out, swag, room sales, collector tour, collection tours. So all of that, in short, is what's happening with Rogue One.
From everything I've read about it and from everything I know from speaking with you guys and with a number of our friends, I'm so excited about it. Glenn, where specifically is Rogue Fun being held in Georgia?
It is being held in Kennesaw, Georgia. It's right near, I can't think of the hotel right now. Jason, what's the hotel address? Do you have that handy or do you know it? You're the one that's been planning a lot of it.
It's the Garden Inn in Kennesaw.
It's a hill. So yeah, it's in Kennesaw, Georgia, which is about 45 minutes north at the Garden Inn in Kennesaw. It's about 45 minutes north of the Atlanta area. So it's a little north, a little bit out of the way, but we're really close to everything up here in Kennesaw.
I've never been to Kennesaw before. I'm excited to go. So Jason, I know that the idea began with you. How did the idea for Rogue Fun originate?
I think, well, as Glenn had said, Narayan, myself, Glenn, we are all sort of the leaders of the club, and I think it's our responsibility to foster a culture around Star Wars for those that are Star Wars collectors. Glenn is always responsible for scheduling meetups and trying to find ways to bring people together. And we've been trying to find different ways to do that because we know how daunting it is to go to someone's house and walk in and, you know, that's someone else's space and you kind of feel like you're invading. So we've been trying to find some neutral spaces. Last year we did a Painting with a Twist night where we all went together to a place where we painted Darth Vader on a Star Destroyer. We did our first Georgia Alliance toy show with Second Chance Toys. It's a local toy shop here in just right outside of Kennesaw, Marietta. And while planning for that, you know, there's a lot of scheduling. There's a lot of coordinating with the Painting with a Twist. There was collecting of money and trying to coordinate timing and things like that. It was during those two things that I said, we could do something bigger. We could do something more on a national stage, maybe. Even though there's no guarantee that people from across the country will actually come, we can still put together something special. And I think quite a few times I said, we could do something like the annual. And that just gave us the confidence. And that's really where this is. I think that's where the idea came from.
Okay. So the annual was an event. And if you've listened to the podcast, you're probably familiar with it. But it was an event that was held 2 years, in 2019, 2022, in the Hudson Valley region in New York. And it was essentially a group of collectors that traveled into New York. They all stayed at the same hotel. And, you know, in addition to touring the sites around and going on a boat cruise, going on a tour of a collector's home, we also had a Saturday event with panels and such. So I'll tell you, if you had to be inspired by something, that's a pretty cool one to be inspired by, because it really captured, I know for us when we did it, it captured a lot of the essence of what we love about Star Wars and collecting. So from this experience, Jason, you had the spark of the idea. Did you then bring it to Narayan and Glenn?
Yes. And I said, the way to do this, and after thinking about it, there's so many different ways to cover Star Wars. There's so many different topics you can explore. I thought the best thing we can do is put our members up on the stage. So the kind of thesis, if you will, was that we're going to showcase the passion, the talent, the contribution, and the knowledge of those who live in Georgia and have contributed to the Star Wars collecting community. And I think we've been pretty true to that. And they've kind of signed off on that and said, yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
Okay. Narayan and Glenn, how did you both individually become part of this Rogue Fun planning?
I guess by default, because we're already so involved with the club that it just naturally became part of the, you know, just part of the process. It was like, Jason was like, let's do this. And I was, you know, let's go for it. You know, I mean, so yeah, there was no question about it. It was just like, you sure we can do it? And then let's go for it.
It'll be fun, he said.
Yes.
It has been.
It has been.
No. One thing I've learned about Jason is that when he commits to an idea, he usually has very good ones. I think coming to know him, he's been one of the most creative people I've ever met. So I knew if it was coming from his mind, I'm on board all the way.
Okay. And then, so as the three of you and, you know, the rest of the team around you in Georgia were starting to prepare for this event, did you guys have any main goals that you wanted for to achieve with Rogue Fun? And then did you have any personal goals as well for it that maybe even before you verbalized them to the other members of the club, just things that affected you personally that you were like, oh, I would love to be able to do this, or my hope for the Rogue Fun event would be this?
I think the Empire Club definitely, you know, with the annual set the stage, you know, for things and set the bar. And I joked, you know, when we had our pre-production meeting that we just looked at the annual and said, that's what we just stole their idea. But yeah, no, I personally, I think, you know, we just wanted it to be a success and didn't want to get stuck with, you know, because there's a financial responsibility when you put something on like this. And the three of us were kind of nervous, you know, will we get stuck with tickets, and will we get stuck, you know, expenses, and will the club have to, how much money will the club get stuck with all these expenses? And thankfully, you know, we want it to be a success, and we want, you know, just to be able to put on a good show and have people involved.
For me, I had two kind of guiding principles when planning this to make it my, I guess, a goal, if you will. Premium event. The word premium was in the back of my mind. Like anything that we did, we had to do it to the best of our abilities, which meant that we couldn't compromise. We had to do what we could to stretch the budget, like Glenn was just saying, but at the same time deliver. But then the event itself is called Rogue Fun, so we wanted to make sure we had fun in it. So it's like, how do you balance having something that's premium and kind of upscale, but at the same time you have fun with it? So I think we've accomplished it. I think we've blended the two together well, and I think we're going to deliver a show that's a premium event, and it's going to be fun for anybody who's attending.
I'm really glad you said that, Jason, because I think it's reflected so far in everything that you guys have done. And, you know, even down to the design and the style, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but you know, there is a really strong element of fun, but it also does feel like everything that you've done so far to get us to this point has been at a premium level, and that you are certainly making it worthwhile, I think, for so many collectors to be, you know, coming down, you as a team. So Narayan, did you have any goals, any personal goals?
Not so much goals per se, but I will say that all of the different collectors events that I've had the privilege to be invited to or to be able to attend, including the annual or even some of the international collectors events, it's when you go there, you see the effort that's put in by the hosts. And I feel like this event for us is a way of giving back to the wider community and to show, you know, our hospitality back for what they showed us. And so it's, to me, that's the main motivation for and driving force for me. And, you know, it's, we're not trying to compete with those events. Those events were stellar. We're just now just, you know, making our own flavor of that type of event. And now it's our chance to host and be hospitable to everybody that's coming in. So
I think one of the most special things about our community is that there isn't some outside company or leader really in control of it. And it's really, essentially, it's up to us, right, to make these sort of events and experiences and moments. And the people that are doing it are our fellow peers, which I think is amazing. I know that when our group, the Empire State Club, was planning the annual at the beginning, they were spurred on by the 2018 ICE event in New York, and they had to arrange hosting duties and getting sort of, you know, prepared for the travelers coming in. And when they did that, they looked and they said, okay, we were able to do this. Let's see if we can do this on a bigger scale for the Empire State Club and for all these different clubs that would want to come in. What, besides the annual, because you'd mentioned the annual was an influence, what are some of the other either events that you've attended or the clubs or the conventions that have really played a part to get you here? Because I think it's always amazing. We take these moments and we iterate on them. And seeing Rogue Fun now as one of the pinnacles has just been spectacular. And, in, you know, like every other event that we've had, it points to the ones that have come before in a really great way. So what are some of those? I'll start with you, Glenn.
The only real Star Wars stuff I've been, you know, fortunate to attend has been the like Celebration and then the one in Nashville. I've been to that one, and both of those, it's the people that make it what it is, you know, and they just, you know, when you're around a bunch of group of people that collect the same stuff you do and is into the same genre and hobby that you're into, it's very home, you know, you feel like you're at home and you feel like you meet all new friends. And, you know, and especially now, I guess when in this Facebook era, it's gotten even bigger. So, but I'm sorry, I'm going off topic. I'm sorry. But yeah, no, it's been Celebration and it's been Nashville that I've been able to go to. And, both of those were good times.
Ryan?
As I mentioned before, you know, certainly the annual, which I think is the first big collector's event of this sort that I went to, but also the international collector's events, which are very intimate, kind of more, you know, an organized kind of social gathering at people's homes and touring their collections, but also just spending a lot of time together over, you know, a long weekend. You know, of course, the things that I love about Celebration are probably the things that happen after hours. Things like the collector gatherings or the room sales or the, you know, the special parties like the archive party. And those are always special because they feel like family reunions or class reunions. You're seeing people that you developed relationships with, and it makes that huge, you know, overwhelming sense of, you know, thousands upon thousands of people at Celebration feel much more manageable. You've got, you know, a close-knit group of, you know, let's just say 50 to 100 people that you know very well, and you are, you know, it's hard to see them on the show floor, but when you'll know you'll see them, you know, after hours at these types of events. And that's what we're trying to bring to this event, is that, again, that intimate sense of collectors spending time together, getting a chance to talk, because we all know at Celebration, things happen so fast. It's such a whirlwind. There's so many people. It's very difficult. It's just loud. It's difficult to have, you know, an extended conversation. But in events like this, that you really get a chance to know somebody, you really get to, in the case of the ICE events, you get to see them in their homes, you get to meet their families. It makes such a big difference. You really develop a long lasting friendship with a lot of these people, and you see them over and over again.
I've seen bonds form, whether they started at a convention like the one in Nashville or like any of the celebrations that we've had. But I've also, I've seen bonds really, really tighten during these ICE events and these more personalized, you know, group events. And I think Rogue Fun has all the makings of continuing that tradition, which is such a blessing for collectors. Because if you were to ask a lot of collectors what moments they remember, it's not the, you know, the wild panels from Celebration or a lot of the you know, those types of moments at a convention. As you said, it's more of the after hour stuff and being in the same room together and being able to connect and to get to know one another on a deeper level. So thrilled that we have this. Jason, was there anything else that you had as far as an influence in a direction to create something like this?
Yeah, they pretty much nailed it. I haven't had the privilege to participate in the annual yet. I've only been able to listen to it through the small podcast called Prototypes and Production.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. It's a good one. You should listen to it sometime. The hosts kind of can drag on a little bit, but
always. I've heard that.
But you can get through it. No, but I think the other things that the collecting track at Celebration was a big influence, obviously, because we've got panels scheduled. And I think that's an essential part, just, you know, sharing information. If I look at the titans of the hobby, the one thing that they've always been able to do is open up their knowledge. They've published books, they share, they welcome, they don't kind of gatekeep that information. So I think it was important to have panels that kind of share information from subject matter experts. And then the other thing from Celebration, the one thing that I love is the Rancho Obi-Wan displays and the exhibitions. And when you walk through that kind of stuff and see cool things, we've got a small exhibition. I don't want anybody thinking we've got something of size like that. We've got a bookshelf of content, but those would be the driving things that kind of inspired me and directed me and where to go with Rogue Fun.
Going to the Cincinnati Toy Show a couple of years ago. I mean, something simple like that, where you kind of had a lot of informal things and you were going to people's homes and meeting people, and it was just around the toy show, and that was, I think, more special to me than Celebration, you know, because it was such on a smaller level. Like Narayan was saying, when you're in a Celebration and there's 100,000 people around you, you don't get to talk, but when there's 100, you can talk a little bit better. And I think that's one thing that we're trying to bring, you know, as far as the opening homes and that kind of thing. We've kind of got that element here too. So that's special. That was a special experience, just a Cincinnati toy show.
I've been to a number of the Cincinnati shows, and you're right. Like there are a lot of planned events at the time, and then there are ones that happen organically or spontaneously, which is always nice. And this is really a question for any of you. When you were working on this, did you seek advice from our fellow collectors who have hosted similar events? And if so, did they give you any sort of information or assistance as far as a direction on what to take?
I had a conversation with Chris Riley, because obviously he's part of the annual and he's been through it twice. So I had a pretty good conversation with him at one point, talking about the do's and don'ts, what to expect, what not to expect. Some of the things that came out of that was just finances. There's a lot of money that goes on in an event like this, and there could be tax implications. So one of the things that Glenn has been focusing on during this whole process was making the club legitimate. What I mean by that is just making it a 501(c)(3), recognized by the government. We're taking care of our taxes. We're not doing anything that's going to get Glenn behind bars or anything like that. So
I would totally hate that, Jason.
Yeah, there'd be one of us that would hate it. Yeah.
The podcast would just be called Smugglers at that point. I don't know.
A Smuggler's Galaxy.
Well, okay. So Glenn, so you were working on making it a legitimate 501(c). That's the correct term, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. I was nervous because, yeah, there was a lot of money going through the PayPal, because that's really the only way you can, or the easiest way to transfer money, because everybody has a PayPal account. And when we had set it up years ago, it just was in my name. And then the more money, I remember when we did the virtual social in 2020, and we did an auction and stuff, and we had raised like $7,000 for Choa. And people were like, dude, you better be careful with that. And then when we did Rogue Fun and that money started coming, it's like, wait a minute, you know? And making it a 501(c)(3) was a big deal. It's not as hard as people think. Yes, it's a lot of work, but it's easy work. You know, it's surprisingly, the federal government, you can do it online and it doesn't take that long. It was harder to be recognized by the state than it was to be recognized by the federal government, which just kind of blows my mind. But yeah, it was very nice to have that weight off of my shoulders. You know, when I don't have the PayPal police knocking on my door, giving me a 1099 form going, "Hey, you made this much money this year." And I'm like, "I didn't, the club did."
Well, sure. And also it's nice too, that around Rogue Fun, this wonderful event that's happening now, it does feel like making it a 501c is essentially the last step to making the club official, you know, and now you guys are doing that and you're ready to really kick this event off as a club. And you're right, Glenn, your PayPal isn't going to be weighed down by the severe expenses of putting on a show and having, you know, ticketing and having all of those types of funds coming in, where it really shouldn't be burdened by one person. I know, you know, we in the Empire State Club, we're doing that up here as well. I believe the Pennsylvania Club has done that. And so, you know, there's been a lot of discussions among the different clubs to become legitimate in that way, just because of the amount of money that comes in for these events. And it's not, you know, you guys aren't making money on this. You guys are paying for the events with these funds that are coming in.
Correct. Yeah. And if any club is on the fence about becoming a 501c3, I'd go ahead and do it, because it's not that hard.
Now, Ryan, once you decided to do this, and before making the event public, did you have any concerns about hosting a gathering of this size, or was this something that you went into full force?
I was more concerned that we would sell the tickets, to be honest with you. I certainly at my home had large gatherings of a different sort. It's a little different, you know, organizing most events surrounding, you know, something that you're doing at your home. You have a little more control over certain things. But when we're doing something in a hotel and it's a little different type of event, and again, we wanted to make it a little more professional. And the main concern is obviously the funds, because you have to book a venue. You have to provide food, and you have to pay for travel expenses for guests. Sometimes you have to, you want to make a nice gift for those that can make the trip. And so all of those things are factoring in. I wasn't as much worried about, you know, the numbers of people we had, because, you know, we knew we would have a lot of support, but it was just initially wondering, you know, are we going to get people to pay money for these tickets? Are we going to have enough people? Because if we don't get it, how are we putting on this event? And again, that inherent risk is always there. And once we had, you know, the event, you know, went on sale and that ceased to be a problem, yeah, then we could tackle the logistics of, you know, what, how do we manage the event in terms of how many people are coming. Now, we did have a hard cap limit, which was determined by, you know, how much the hotel ballroom could hold and how many dinner tickets could be sold and so forth. So that was already set in motion. That was already set in stone before, you know, all of this was even launched. So.
Okay. And so before we get into the ticketing, can you guys give me an idea of what some of the pre-planning was for this? What took place? What were some of the challenges that you faced early on? And then also, what is it like to plan an event of this magnitude? Because for the majority of us, we simply haven't.
The first thing we did was we went to different hotels and kind of kicked tires to see how much it would cost. And we had a ticket price in mind, which was about $100. And we were just trying to meet that. What can we do to get to that point? And there's some hotels at different sides of the town were a little bit more expensive than others. And we didn't want to do anything, you know, crummy. We wanted to make sure that this, again, was a premium event. So it was just going around trying to check out what the catering budget was, what the room charges were, because you have to rent the room on top of the catering. And I found the hotel in Kennesaw, which luckily is like 10 minutes from me, so it's not that difficult to get to and transport things. They gave us a great deal that we couldn't say no to. We toured the place to make sure that everybody signed off on it and said, yeah, we can make this work. This looks like the same size as the annual. Narayan was able to go to the annual, so he was able to compare that to that. And that's one of the most important things, is finding a place that was within our budget.
Yeah, we had toured so many places and looked at so many places, because we've actually, I mean, with I had a little bit of experience with that, because we were trying the Winter Social to move it to a venue. So I had a little bit of knowledge of local places. We looked at breweries. We looked at country clubs. We looked at community centers. And we probably spent a month trying to find a venue, to settle on a venue. I mean, that was the first big step. And then once we had the venue, everything just kind of started falling in place.
The only I agree with both Jason and Glenn there. The only thing I would add to that is I think we knew from the get-go we obviously wanted a central main event, which would be based at the hotel. But we also wanted to make it a whole weekend of activities surrounding that, because we knew people would be coming, you know, from other states, in some cases other countries. So we want to make it worthwhile through their time to build out the weekend, you know, before and after the main event. I was happy to host a gathering at my home again, since in lieu of the Summer Social, which usually happens in July. So we essentially moved one aspect of the Summer Social to the front part of this event. We know that excursions are a big part of these trips, because people also need some free time to, you don't want wall-to-wall activities, at least wall-to-wall planned activities. We want the attendees to have some free time to also explore the region, explore Atlanta. So that's built into the schedule as well. You know, also planned excursions. There's a Kennesaw Mountain hike. Hikes seem to be a very popular thing with some of these collector gatherings. So we thought there's a very nice hike nearby near the hotel. So let's incorporate that. The Kennesaw Run has been a component of several Georgia collectors events in the last couple of years. So that was an easy add to the tail end of the event as well. So we wanted to, you know, really build the whole weekend. So all of that was, we just needed to just flesh it out, but we had an idea that it would be a main event, but surrounded by activities, you know, before and after.
Another thing that we considered when talking to Chris, you know, he was like, he talked about like, how do you supplement with additional funds? Do you go out and say, hey, would you like to sponsor the event? Or would you like to do something else? And Ryan came up with the idea. The Georgia Club has been doing this Wilro Hood patch set, where we take Wilro Hood and we make characters from the movies, a specific movie. We've done Empire Strikes Back. Now we're doing Rogue One. We did Bounty Hunters for the Celebration London event. And we make ice cream patches, so we kind of have a theme around those ice cream and the ice cream flavors. And so Narayan came up with the idea, instead of doing sponsors, let's make a patch set, and we'll have sponsors of the patch set, and we'll pay for the patches, and then we'll pay some extra for the event itself. And that has worked out incredibly successful, because we didn't have to go to anyone and say, hey, would you mind sponsoring us? Would you like to be a breakfast sponsor for $500?
Oh, it's a really smart idea. And I think it's, in a lot of ways too, you know, it's when you have something like the patch set, which people already love, and they understand the quality and time and effort that goes into putting a patch set together, especially, you know, the creativity of it, they already have an idea of what to expect from an event. So it was a great way to promote the event as well, to get people on board, and to do a little something more than just, as you said, asking, you know, for sponsorship. So I know you've had some great sponsors turn out already, which is wonderful. And it sounds like everything was, you know, is rolling along. It sounded like it was rolling along kind of in pre-production, and then So then you guys went live with the ticket sales. Do you remember when that was?
September. No, October.
Okay. So in October, I believe it was on a Friday night, mm-hmm. and you chose to put them up on Facebook for sale on Friday night. How many tickets were you selling at the time?
125. Is that right, Narayan?
110.
You're right. We extended it afterwards when we had the wait list. We were like, how do we cram more people in that ballroom?
Okay, so before you had even put up a ticket for sale, going into that Friday night, and this is really a question for each of you. Glenn, we'll start with you on this one. What was your expectation for it? Now, remember, you hadn't had a ticket sold yet. You didn't know what to expect. You didn't know who would want to show up and attend. What was your expectation?
I think we were hoping for like 80 people to buy tickets, and we were kind of like, my expectation is I just hope we sell out before the event.
So if you were putting it on with the event being in May, you had a number of months, 8 months
right.
before. So your goal was 110 tickets in 8 months.
Yeah, basically. In okay. my mind, I thought it would take, it could take 8 months to sell out.
Okay. And Narayan, what was your expectation for it?
Pretty much the same. I would thought we may get to half that amount in the first, because usually the excitement's initially, you get those early adopters and they usually buy tickets, you know, right away. And then I figure it would be like this slog through the winter months, because it's such a long time until the event. And so sometimes it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. People don't know what they're doing yet, that far out. And so, I was thinking, okay, maybe we'll sell about half the tickets.
And 50% would have been wonderful, would have been absolutely wonderful. Jason, what was your expectation?
Yeah, again, like as I was saying before, the titans of this hobby, they share their information, their knowledge, and their experience. And Chris Riley has been, the conversation I had with him was so enlightening. The expectation was probably to sell 80 tickets total and just hope that we would, I don't know, get to the end somehow. So that was the expectation of my mind. I was creating like a marketing plan. We're going to have to do this, this, and this to promote the event throughout the year to try to get to that 110. So we don't have to dip into our own pockets. And, I think that's where my head was at the time.
Okay. And how did that marketing plan go for you, Jason?
It went out the window. I didn't need it. It was
so
crazy.
Why didn't you need it? What happened on that Friday?
That Friday we sold out. The night of
you guys
the
sold
event.
Out in 4 hours,
yeah,
which was absolutely absurd. It was one of those things where when it went on, I was planning on going, and I was just like, you know what, let me kind of sleep on it because I just want to make sure, you know, that I'll be able to go. And that went out the window because I think I became like the 85th ticket, you know, because it was going so fast that I said to myself, if I don't buy a ticket now, by the time I wake up in the morning and decide, yes, I am going to go because I was planning on going anyway, it would be sold out. So you guys sold 110 tickets. Narayan, what was that feeling like?
It was jaw dropping. I was like overwhelmed that, you know, that there was that much buzz and excitement. Timing is everything with these things. And I think we did benefit, you know, from the timing of when we sold the tickets, also to the timing of when we scheduled the event. One of the things we did do is we did reach out to some of the leaders of the other clubs just to make sure there wasn't any other large competing collectors events happening, you know, very close to ours, you know, because you kind of you'll cannibalize other, you know, attendees, if you hold it too close. And, you know, there was no celebration scheduled for that year, as well.
No ice events.
No ice events. And the other thing is we came off of an ice event just about a month before, which we had seen some of our friends, but also had promoted it there, had also promoted it at the summer social just a few months prior to that. And so all of that definitely must have built a buzz, because it seemed like everybody was ready to just I think we announced it like a month before the tickets would go on sale, such and such date in October. And we just couldn't believe it that, you know, in the first like couple of minutes, they were like, we were already at like 30. And I was just like, whoa. So we were absolutely thrilled. It took a lot of pressure off us, you know, so that we could concentrate on actually planning the event instead of marketing.
And I want to congratulate you guys because you didn't just sell out. Glenn, what happened after you had sold the tickets?
We had a waiting list. We had more people contacting us to get on a waiting list. So we had what, a waiting list of like 15, 20 right off the bat? Guys?
Yes.
Yeah. So I just remember that night we were, I was outside on my back deck. You know, I was watching TV with my wife and we were like, all right, tickets are live. And the three of us are in a chat, just our minds are blown at these tickets selling out. Jason's texting every like minute. We've sold 10 more. We've sold 5 more. We were, you know, we're at 80. And then you go to bed or, you know, and you sell out. And yeah, it was just such an insane pressure off of us that, yeah.
I think I was messaging people that I was really hoping that they would try to come. I was like, you need to get the ticket now. It's going to go. That I was just like almost panicked that some of the people that I thought were really interested in coming wouldn't get a chance. And so that I was just like trying to message people. It's like, wake up, the tickets are like flying.
I was doing the same thing. And, I had wanted to, I was hoping that our friend and modern prototype collector, Anthony Pagano, would go because he does live in the region. And I was trying to get in touch with him and I was just frantically messaging him saying, tickets are going to sell out. You know, you might be asleep at this point, but you know, if you get up, just make sure you buy a ticket because they're going to be sold out by the morning. And I really didn't think he was going to be able to purchase one. And then when he did, I mean, I was just overjoyed. One of the things I wanted to share with you guys that I just remembered, and it really touched my heart at the time, there was a sense that as people were signing up to attend, that there was a joy being shared in that group page from the other collectors who were really excited to see when names would pop up and everyone was really supportive and really encouraging. And it just felt really good because it felt instantly connective that this was going to be a really special event. And you know, there was visible joy happening at seeing the names of our friends popping up and purchasing those tickets.
That was the intent the entire time. We planned it that way. We're master planners.
You did a fantastic job. I mean, I guess you were just making the marketing plan as just an exercise and we're prepared to throw it out anyway. But Really, that's amazing that you didn't have to do any marketing for it when you think of it.
It was a relief because then we could just focus on doing the event the best that we could. Mm-hmm. Hindsight's 2020. Sorry, let me just finish this up. We didn't intend it this way. Hindsight, like I was saying, is 2020. But I think there was a FOMO, like the fear of missing out. People were seeing the tickets being pulled away and slowly just disappearing. And you know, there's only 10 left. They better act now. And I think a lot of the other events that get put on, it's just you buy your ticket. Just, you know, here's my $80. Here's give me my ticket. There's no way to see like who else is attending. And so I think having a claim sale like that really helped propel that to sell out the night of the night we went live.
And I think it also helped too that the variety of collectors and the level of collectors. I mean, we have, you know, people coming in from all different states and from other countries, and just names within the hobby that are recognizable, who are excited to be there from all different clubs and groups and regions. And so, I mean, that really spurred it on as well too. Were there any collectors that you were surprised to see attending?
I didn't think Glenn was going to come.
Oh, Glenn's coming?
Yeah, he's going to be there.
Okay. All right, cool. Hey, great. No, but I mean, as far as ones that, you know, whether it was distance or maybe you didn't think it was on their radar, were there any particular names that stood out to you that you were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he or she is traveling in?
I think for me, the only one that I had in my mind, we had a wish list of what our panels would look like. And there was one name on the panel that I thought, you know, it'd be great if he could come, but we're not sure. We'll have to wait. And it was one of the
George Lucas.
Yeah. He said no.
Maybe next time. That's
he
fine.
Said he was making some museum somewhere. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. I was like, whatever.
Sounds like an excuse.
Yeah. I said McClunky and walked away. Steve Sansweet, we reached out to him early on and we wanted him to be part of this. And he wasn't sure at the time. It wasn't until after ticket sales that he finally gave us that firm yes. And so I'm really excited to hang out with him. I've met him in passing at Celebration. I'm really excited that he's going to be able to hang out and just chill as a collector. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, his booth at Celebration or what's going on. He could just hang out and talk to collectors. And I think that's going to be a really good thing for us in the event.
As a journalist, Star Wars fan, and author, he is a hero of mine. And, you know, I grew up with his book. From concept to screen to collectible. And it's just anytime he attends an event too, it just also does feel like it becomes a little more official too. So Narayan, how many collectors do we have on tap now that are going to be coming into Georgia for the event?
That's a good question. Official attendees, ticketed attendees, including ticketed attendees, presenters, volunteers, hosts, it's 135. But I'm pretty sure there's going to be a few extra that will be here for the weekend, even if they don't necessarily have tickets for the main event, that will be making an appearance or, you know, attending what they can. So I don't know. We'll see what the actual number ends up being. I'm anticipating as many as 150 for that Friday mixer. So, because there's also some people that accompany the collectors, for example, spouses that may not necessarily be interested in like the panel ticket, but they'd like to come into town to do some of the more social aspects of the event. And so I think there's a fair number of those. They're like, yeah, I'm not sure I want to listen to the collecting things, but I want to, you know, come meet some of the other people that are going to be in town. So,
which is totally fine. The more the merrier, but it is really, it's a testament to what the three of you and the rest of the Georgia Club are putting together. But just, you know, when you think about it, at a minimum, 135 people, 150, whatever it will be, that's an incredible amount of collectors that are willing to take the time to drive in, fly in and really spend the weekend immersed in Star Wars with the panels, with collecting, and just all the events that you guys have planned.
So that is a look at the beginnings of Rogue Fun and how the idea became a reality for Star Wars fans. In part two of our conversation with Glenn, Narayan, and Jason, they'll share insights into the weekend's exciting itinerary, along with more stories behind planning this epic Star Wars collectors event. We'll return to the Peach State in the next episode of Star Wars, Prototypes, and Production.